You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Celine Candarelli. She's an artist living and working in London. Celine, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
Let's talk about your work. What's happening in your studio now? What are you preparing for?
What's happening in my studio now is that I'm both making a new body of work and curating a show, which is not something I often do. I'm curating a show that will be called Display Show, as I've been interested in forms of display in one way or another for many years, and I realize I've accumulated quite a lot of research, and I'm interested in the typology of artworks that are also to be used to display other things. So I decided to put all of this research together into an exhibition.
Well, that's very interesting. In a way, that's a nice way to also talk about how your work evolved, right? I mean, this is the research that you're doing goes back to perhaps the beginning of how you've made and displayed work yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes from a very long concern or interest or even passion, I would say, actually, that is the looking at how artworks and context somehow communicate, meaning, you know, what the context of exhibitions is also as a medium. Because I think, you know, I really believe this, that as an artist, you don't just work on objects, but you work within a specific world, within a specific context. And by that, I mean that it includes the sort of architectural qualities of the space in which you work and the space in which you exhibit, but also the social and political aspects of that. So some of it is very visible, some of it is very invisible, but I think display, especially because in the English language it's a verb, includes all of these different aspects of what it means to make culture, really.
Right, right. So everyone else can experience it. So maybe we should talk a little bit about, I want to talk about perhaps how your older work relates to all of this, but maybe we should talk a little bit about just what will happen in the exhibition you're curating, because that does seem to be such an insight into how you're working and some of the ideas and issues that you're working with. What will the show look like? How will that be designed or curated?
Well, I have, and you might know from previous projects that I've been collecting somehow like radical exhibitions, displays, and examples of radical exhibitions from the 20th century, and it's a very important part of my references. So I'm talking about things like El Lisitsky's abstract cabinet or Frederick Kiesler's displays that he made for exhibitions in Vienna before he emigrated to the United States, or the displays of Lili Reich when she did, for example, the Silke and Vevet Cafe in the Berlin exhibition in 1927. I've somehow been collecting these examples of exhibitions that I think look like nothing else, as references, as things to work with, almost like a sort of toolbox. And I think one of the challenges of making exhibitions, for me at least, is to find different ways of including historical references that often cannot be included in physically. You know, often the object is not there. So how do you actually refer to something? How do you make it present without the actual object being present? So for a display show, because there is such an important relationship, I think, between those historical references and, you know, a whole bunch of contemporary artists who are working with issues of display, of course, including myself, but, you know, with a lot of other people, some of them friends, some whom I don't know at all, these questions become quite relevant, because you can only include displays if they're somehow put to work. You know, displays, I think, if there is such a subject, or let's say things that are called displays that are not quite objects, you can only see them when they are displaying other things. Right, because displays are to be used. So I'm in part reconstructing, in part borrowing, in part referring to historical displays and using them to display contemporary works or other historical displays. So so that everything in the exhibition will be put into relationship with each other. I know it's quite difficult to imagine what that means, but effectively it means trying to imagine an exhibition in which works are collaborating. You know, they're kind of working together in the same way that people do, except that this, through display, might happen in also a physical or sensorial way, let's say.
I mean, that's what a good show should do, really, right? A well-curated show should be, I mean, it's something I think, where all the works are kind of talking to each other, and there's some kind of conversation in there.
In an ideal world, then
right,
that would also allow you to understand why an exhibition exists in the first place, right? Because it means
right.
that the sum of its parts says something that each individual work cannot say. I really believe that. I completely agree with you. But I think it happens very rarely, and even more so rarely in a physical way, meaning artworks are rarely put on top of each other, for instance. And they rarely work together. And in a way, working with something like display liberates me of some of the hierarchies or preciousness around the objects and its autonomy, because there's a lot of artists, you know, both historically and in my immediate context, who also make work that include other things that are made to be used in one way or another. So by using them in this way, it means that the boundaries of them are somehow a bit more fuzzy, a little bit less focused.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, when I think of shows like that I've seen, they're memorable, and I can count them. They're not that many. I've seen a lot of wonderful shows, but exhibitions where I came into them, I think one was at a gallery in New York, Blum and Poe, years ago, and I remember seeing there was, I think, a Peter Halley on one wall, a Malevich painting on another wall. I think there was something like, not Fra Angelico, but some kind of Renaissance image. And they were given a strange amount of space. You know, the spacing wasn't equal, and it was just, it was extraordinary. I had never seen a show like that. It seemed, I had to keep looking at it. I had to keep, you know, kind of listening to the conversation between those pieces. And it's just, I've never forgotten it, but
yeah.
It's true.
Real joy in that, I think. You know, there's real joy in working like that and also seeing exhibitions like that. I think because it means that the works exhibited are worked with. Well, somehow they're also tools to communicate things. But
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's quite useful to give an example. Like an artist I really enormously admire and like very much is Rita McBride, who is based in LA, I think. And she has published a series of books that she calls the Ways. The Ways are novels, somehow trash novels, pop fiction, that she commissions. And part of the criteria for the commissioning of these novels that are like completely inherently readable and really do not feel like high art at all are that at some point in the story, her works appear. So that the novels somehow act as exhibitions, but exhibitions in other worlds, you know, fictional worlds, and yet the very tangible world of, you know, reading a novel, whatever it might be, like in the airport or in a station. So I really like them as a way of thinking about display, but I'm constructing somehow a reading room for Rita McBride's Ways out of a reconstructed T-type display by Frederick Kiesler. So you'd be able to sit on the Kiesler display in order to read. And that's a way that these two works somehow, I don't know, conflate two different times and two different concepts of art, but into one installation that I'm quite excited about. And luckily Rita's into it. I mean, of course, you know, I have to talk about each artist in terms of what I'm doing and why, but she seems to be totally into it. I think her work really fits. So
yeah, she's a wonderful artist, of course. So let's move back a little bit to some of your earlier works. What do you think is the first work that you created that set you on this path of researching display and becoming interested in? Was it out of school or before school?
Well, you know, I studied architecture. I actually never went to art school, so I think I entered the world of culture, let's say, through thinking about the space for culture. I mean, I'm sure, even though it's hard to say how, I'm sure that influenced me enormously, not just in terms of what I look at, but also in terms of how I work. I think in terms of forming my methodologies, for instance, which means on a pragmatic level, for instance, that I've always started any project by looking at the site, looking at the context, you know, studying where it is and trying to find what the problematics are that are already in a place where you might show work or where you might do something. You know, so there's an understanding of site that is somehow the first action to be taken. But the very first exhibition, in terms of what I would consider the first work that I'm not completely embarrassed about, let's say, that I could still talk about, that is listed in my CV, was a series of films that I made with a writer called Guy Manzabert, which all amounted to, with films by other artists in a site-specific exhibition in the Elephant and Castle, which is a neighborhood in the south of London. The films were made in the neighborhood and shown in the shopping center of this neighborhood in a disused shop, projected nonstop for a week. So it was somehow a reflection on this area. And this, in a way, was a radio collaboration, using the text of, you know, Guy's very beautiful prose, and making films that were somehow architectural, I think, in definitely in quality and in the way that they were organized. You know, there were different ways of viewing space, but also restituting it to the site, and in that sense adding or altering the existing conditions of the site, which, you know, is of course an artistic strategy, but it's very much an architectural one as well. So I think that allows me, if I think of that as my first work, I can really trace like a very specific line that brings me to where I am today in terms of this slight obsession with uncovering existing conditions and thinking of work as an alteration of these existing conditions. So you never start from scratch. You always start from an existing place in which you might add something. Any object that you make is added to a very complex existing context that, you know, rather than ignore it, I always decide to include it and to somehow work with it. But then quite early on, I started working with this artist curator called Gavin Wade, and we set up a collective called Support Structure, and that was in 2003. At the time, we called each other artist architect, that was me, and he was artist curator. I think he still calls himself an artist curator. And we started looking at, you know, the things that allow us to perceive reality as it is. So structures of support, display devices, staging devices, all the things that are normally behind or under, you know, artwork, but also just, you know, reality as we perceive it. So things like scaffolding, both conceptually and physically, the things that hold the world together, which are normally not the center of attention, but we decided to take that position as artists somehow and work with those.
And this collaborative support structure, would you create exhibitions in different venues with that, or did you have your own venue?
We decided that in order to learn what support meant, we should put this idea, the support structure, through a learning process. And the learning process was 10 projects, 10 exhibition projects that looked at support from different points of view. So the first one was In Support of Art, which was an exhibition for which we provided the interface at the Chisenhale Gallery in London, which was then followed by In Support of Corporations, Education, Politics. Now, literally, like you would build a curriculum in a university. But the end of this process, which took 10 years, were two projects, one a bibliography of support, which is a sort of manual called Support Structures, which is a book, you know, that obviously has a different legacy when you're doing a book as opposed to an exhibition. And the other one was the founding of a space. So to create an organization, an arts organization, that would function with much of that same ethos by being a support structure both for the production and the perception and interpretation of art. This is called East Side Project. It's in Birmingham. It was founded in 2008 and it is still open. So it still somehow functions like this. So while the project support structure does not exist in that guise anymore, we continue to work together, but as directors of the organization.
Now, this is, you know, this is after you've gotten your PhD and you're in and you're doing these projects in London, you could have obviously gone into architecture or teaching right away, but as I understand it, you didn't. Is that correct? You were just initially working with Gavin Wade on these projects and didn't teach until later, or...
No, I did always teach, except that I used to have a bit of a double life with the teaching because I used to still teach in architecture school, even though my life was quite disconnected to architectural practice as we know it. It was quite an important link in some ways, but it's only recently that I started teaching in art schools, actually. So that's, I teach at the Academy in Milan since, I think it's my fourth year this year. And that's changed a bit. On the one hand, you know, it's a bit more focused. I've obviously been invited. I mean, my professorship has been offered to me because of the work that I've already done. Whereas when you start teaching, when you're like 20-something, everything's still to do somehow. So that's a really big difference. But it also means that I'm not connected to architecture at all anymore. And in some ways, there's something a bit sad about that. You know, like the idea of having practice that exists in different disciplines is quite interesting. It's quite useful. In some ways, it makes my practice a bit more conventional, I think. You know, I'm an artist who teaches in art school. But that is okay. I think that's quite okay.
And so, you know, the whole support structure is fascinating to me. That sounds like a project and obviously something that's ongoing or was in terms of what it grew into. How you were talking about tracing a line of your work from before then and after that, after support structure. What was next? How did your work grow from that, or what were you doing after that?
I think in many ways, doing a project like that, you know, that spans over so many years and helps you to define what your practice is looking at or, you know, concentrating on, means that you've kind of established a territory. So I think in my case, it really allowed me to do my work a little bit more freely afterwards, once I'd established that support structures is what I'm interested in and what I'm looking at. Most of my work would fit within that label somehow. You know, most of the things I do, most of the displays I'm doing at the moment would fit if they were called support structures as well. But it also meant that I could do things a little bit more lightly, and opening East Side Projects was in a way the end of our collaboration, because of course somebody needs to be there. Once you open an art organization, so Gavin is there. He's the, I think we decided to call him the executive director. He's there every day, and I'm not. I'm kind of traveling around the world doing projects much more as an individual. I do occasionally go back to curate shows, but my work has developed much more as a singular artist, let's say. So, for example, I never used to have solo shows because I always used to work in collaboration. And the last few years, I've developed bodies of work that are much more individual, my own. So, like, through solo shows, like one I just had that just closed a few weeks ago in Milan in a space called Hangar Bicocca. It was accumulating quite a lot of work that had been done in ways that were quite specific to particular situations. So not exactly site-specific, but at least situation-specific, but gathered in this new context, so given new meanings. But, you know, the stuff in the room was, almost all of it was made exclusively by me, and that is definitely a new thing. Now, there's somehow, for me, an ambiguous pleasure in adding objects to a world that is already full of them.
Well, I think that's a pleasure a lot of people share.
Yeah.
As odd as it is. So you're traveling all over the world, and you know, I know in the last few years you seem to be, you know, going all over the place. What is next? What is it that you want to do next? There's this curatorial project, and do you see yourself as continuing to do these kind of shows and travel and create objects as well as curate?
I am trying to concentrate my effort into somehow larger projects. Yes, I think that's quite important to me, you know, to try and avoid the one thing after another. That is a bit of a disease, you know, when you go to from one show to the other and you end up making things that can only be gestures. So display show is part of an ongoing interest, like a really large research. I use it for teaching. I made a lot of work that I consider to be displays that might be used to display work by others or even works that I might have made or archives, you know, from different times. So that's really relevant to me. I think doing something like display show allows me to, you know, show artists that I love and work with them, but also continue this research into what it means and what kind of objects they are. So I really like working like this, and I'd like to be able to continue. I have been traveling quite a lot, but almost exclusively through Europe. You know, the Europe and the Middle East have really been somehow my, I don't know if it's my center of attention. It's just that these are the people who call me. And I never really understand how geography works with practices, but it really does. You know, like your practice is appealing to a particular country and then another one, and you never really understand why. So the Middle East, I mean, obviously, you know, things have changed quite a lot since my Egyptian project, for example, which was 2010 to 2012. So I'm not working in Egypt at all anymore, and I haven't been back to Turkey for quite a while. But I'm now working quite a lot in Scandinavia, and I recently spent some time in a residency in San Juan in Puerto Rico, in a really wonderful organization called Beta Local, which I really liked very much, but also I discovered this entirely new context and relationship to territory and politics that is happening in Puerto Rico that has somehow renewed an interest in the Latin American world, which I'd like to investigate a bit more on. So if I could choose, I would try and look in that direction for the next few years, I would say. And in terms of issues, yeah, the issue of forms of display is really important to me right now. And also, I'm really interested in continuing my research on commons and forms of commonality. So they're all things that stem quite directly from this idea of support, you know, in one in a more directly physical way and the other one in a more, let's say, political way, but still, so.
Well, that sounds very exciting. And Celine, thanks so much for talking with us today. I really appreciate your time, and I'm glad I got the chance to interview you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.